Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. Today's Monday, May 20th. I'm Stephen Overly. If you scroll to the end of the Senate's new AI policy roadmap, past the ideas for investing in research and developing new laws, there's a list of experts who offered input on the report. There are roughly 170 names on the list, and one of them is Suresh Venkatasubramanian. We've actually had Suresh on the podcast before. He was a White House tech advisor who helped write the Biden administration's AI Bill of Rights back in 2022. These days, Suresh teaches computer science at Brown University and leads the Center for Technological Responsibility, Reimagination, and Redesign. So when the AI roadmap came out last week, he read it like a professor. And the marks, well, weren't very good.
It's one of those things, again, like, I'm grading reports right now, right? You're at the point like, oh, why? Why did you have to do such an incompetent job? Why could you have done better? I know you can do better. Why did you do any better? It's just frustrating.
Now, the authors of the roadmap have said it was designed to be bipartisan. And the reality is that Republicans and Democrats are split over some of the issues that Suresh cares most about, like how to handle algorithmic bias. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's office told me the roadmap does not capture all of his AI priorities, and that there are already bills under consideration to tackle risks posed by AI. You'll hear more from them at the end of the episode. But first, my conversation with Suresh on why he thinks the roadmap came up short. Well, Suresh, welcome back to Politico Tech.
Nice to be back.
You're always good for a tweet, and one caught my attention. I'm going to read it here quickly. It says, the new Senate roadmap on AI carries strong, quote, I had to turn in a final paper to get a passing grade, so I won't think about the issues and will just copy old stuff and recycle it vibes. Tell me how you really feel, Suresh.
Well, you know, I'm in the middle of grading right now, so grading is on my mind. And when I was looking at the report, I guess my overwhelming feeling was disappointment. It's like, you know, you have a student in your class who you know can do well, and then you see what they produce, like they really didn't put enough time into this, or they didn't put enough energy into this. And I say that, I think, because if you look at the report itself and the roadmap, first of all, it's a roadmap, it's not an actual legislative proposal, which is disappointing. And that's disappointing because I know a lot of very good proposals for legislation that were held up and were being put on hold because of the anticipated conclusion of this process. The next problem, I think, is that it feels like this report does not reflect all the work that has come out, especially out of the White House and about the executive branch over the past year and a half.
I was going to ask you how you felt this compares to what the White House has put out so far, starting with, you know, the AI Bill of Rights that you worked on, all the way up through kind of the executive order and some of the steps that it's taken recently.
It feels as if none of that existed in the world in which this report was constructed. In the world in which this report was constructed, the only thing that seems to exist is we need to support the tech industry. And especially given the statements that repeatedly came out of Congress to the effect of, you know, we want to make sure we get ahead of what's happening with AI, that we channel its benefits while making sure we put guardrails in place, we don't just sort of fall asleep at the wheel. This report doesn't really do that. It doesn't do any of those things. You know, I mean, you look at the executive order, it's a rich, rich set of questions that agencies are being charged with answering. The OMB guidance has very, very detailed, you know, instructions to agencies. There was a chance here, I think, to codify all of this in law in a way that would, you know, enshrine them in a future-proof kind of way. And that didn't happen either.
What do you really miss the mark here? Was it what was left out of this report or what was included in it?
I think both, right? You can see extremely varying levels of specificity in different parts of the report, which to me is telling about which parts people paid attention to with very specific proposals and details, and which parts was like, okay, we have to say something so that we get the points. So we'll just put some words in so that we say, yeah, we've talked about civil rights. It's okay, it's done. There's a word in there, and that's it, right? I think Nick Marda was the one who sort of highlighted the fact that the word bias appears as often as the phrase space debris in this report, which in a report on AI governance is a little surprising. So I think it's both a question of what was left out and what was only superficially, at best, talked about in this report, given what we know already. I want to emphasize that point, right? We are no longer in a place where we don't know what's going to happen. We are no longer in a place where we cannot anticipate the problems. We've had many years, right, of problems well documented. I mean, the Bill of Rights documents this in great detail, but there's plenty of documentation of what the issues are. There is no reason why we have to sit and, you know, be vague about what we need to do. We know a ton, and this report makes it sound like we don't know anything. That's what's disappointing.
I want to hone in on bias, which you mentioned there, because the report really makes kind of one mention of the potential for unintended harmful bias, and it really just acknowledges that other people are concerned about it. How do you think they handled that issue, and what more should they have done, in your view?
They handled it by completely ignoring it. So they did not handle it at all. Yeah, they completely ignored the vast majority of concerns around the use of AI right now. And they completely abdicated the responsibility to do something concrete about it, which hurts more, especially because there is so much we know about what to do. So much.
What's the missed opportunity there? You know, what could the Senate have done here that would have maybe made a bigger difference?
The U.S. had been lagging behind in AI governance for the longest time, right? And I think with the executive order and the guidance that is coming out, we are beginning to catch up. And we're beginning to catch up in a very U.S.-centric way, articulating the way we want to do things, very sectorally specific, you know, deferring, you know, judgment to those who know what to do in the agencies and thinking about this very carefully. The Senate had the opportunity to come in and say, you know, we want to codify a lot of this. We want to enshrine this. We want to put this into law. We want to put this into practice. And we want to go beyond just what the federal government does, which is, of course, only what the EO could cover. And we want to say things that would cover a lot of what the private sector is doing in its interactions with government, interactions with people. This is the job of government, after all, right? To sort of look out for the people, not just look out for the tech industry. And you see this happening in the states. A lot of states have been putting out legislation or legislative proposals that are doing this. So even there, it's not even, well, it's too hard to come up with legislation. Even that's not true anymore. There are like, I don't know, 650 different bills in the states right now. And some are very close to being passed, right? Some have been passed. There is no shortage of methods, ideas, policy gadgets, and recommendations to decide what we have to do. And they could have done it, and they didn't.
Reading the report, I was thinking about a lot of the concerns I hear from the public about artificial intelligence, right? Things like AI election, you know, misinformation, deep fakes of ordinary people, AI-generated non-consensual pornographic images. All of those are mentioned in this roadmap. I guess was not clear to me is whether we're sort of any closer to coming up with policy solutions to those problems.
Right. And that's my problem with a lot of this, right? It, again, it's a report that uses the words to say, yeah, we've mentioned it. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, they never studied the lectures. They didn't do the homeworks, right? I mean, we know what to do. We don't have perfect ideas, but we have a ton of recommendations of what we can start with. There's actually a bill sitting in the Senate right now on elections and deepfakes. I mean, again, none of these are perfect. They're not going to be perfect. We have to keep refining them. But there is no shortage of recommendations and ideas. And all they had to do was pay attention.
I guess, where do you think maybe things went wrong in your view here? You know, this was a bipartisan process. Is it a result of compromise that need to be made? Or where do you think maybe they went wrong here?
I know that they had talked about the importance of coming to terms on things that everyone agrees on. And I respect that. I think a lot of these discussions are, in fact, bipartisan. They're shared concerns that everyone has across the aisle. When I look at this, all I can think of is they have produced a document that will essentially preserve the status quo. And there's only one group that benefits from the status quo, the tech companies that do not want any regulation at all. And that keeps coming back to my mind, that the goal here, whether it's compromise, whether it's bipartisan support, that may all be true. But the real goal is to do nothing so that the tech companies can continue doing what they're doing.
The area of agreement that seemed most pronounced was the funding for AI research, right? That was kind of the headline out of this, you know, that ultimately they'd like to be spending $32 billion per year. Do you think that is a wise use of federal dollars?
I think investment is very important. I think focusing on what more we can do, because there's so much we don't know about the underlying technologies. So it's very important to do the research, no question. Yeah, but even there, you look at the topics that they want to invest in, and I'm looking at this right now, and it's like it's very clear that they don't want to invest in issues around bias. They don't want to invest in broad-based, university-level, open research that can ask the questions that a lot of companies building LLMs don't want to have answered about how fragile they are, how unreliable they are, where they might be causing problems rather than actually producing solutions. I mean, I was at the Senate Insight Forum on Innovation, and one of the things I said in my remarks, for example, is that we shouldn't just be funding the tech. We should be funding broader socio-technical analyses of how the tech is going to affect labor. It's going to affect the workforce. It's going to affect how we do science. It's going to affect how we sort of construct and build knowledge. And if you look at the very, very, very narrow focus on technology development, that seems to be missing. I mean, I'm a computer scientist. I would love to get a piece of $32 billion in funding for research. That's very important. But I think what's incomplete and sort of sadly incomplete about this is how it doesn't reflect everything we've learned over the past many years about the right way to do research and development in this space.
What do you make of the fact that there is this emphasis on investment in AI development rather than on the risks that the technology poses?
I come back to my point of it's not so much what they say, but where they give emphasis. There is no doubt that we must invest in AI research because there's so much we don't know. I will always defend that. But in addition to that, at the same time, we have to invest in the FTC. We have to invest in the regulatory agencies. We have to invest in staffing. You know, these agencies are doing a ton with very little resources. NIST is working on a shoestring budget, and yet they're doing as much as they can. The NER is severely underfunded. And they do mention the NER in this, so that's good too, I think. But it's about a portfolio of investments in the ecosystem that makes the whole process work. The ecosystem involves new research, especially at universities, especially because they can ask hard questions about technology that will not be asked by the tech companies. We need to invest in protections and regulations, and we need to invest in upskilling, especially people in government agencies and in across the country who can help govern and put guardrails and install the right policies around them for these systems and supervise them and govern them. We need to do all of these things. If you do only one of them, then you're going to get askew again. And that appreciation of the portfolio investments that's required is missing from this document.
Yeah, obviously, we've talked about several points in the report. Was there any other parts when you were reading it that stuck out to you as either inadequate or problematic or great, you know, just that you had sort of a stronger reaction to?
I mean, it's hard to point to anything that wasn't inadequate.
It really just had no winners for you.
Well, I mean, like, it's one of those things, again, like, I'm grading reports right now, right? You read the reports like, oh, why did you have to do such an incompetent job? Why could you have done better? I know you can do better. Why did you do any better? It's just frustrating.
If you're grading this report, what grade does it get?
So I'm in an Ivy League institution. I am, you know, I'm not allowed to give grades below C. I'm just joking there. But I'd give it a C. But frankly, it's worse. You know, if I had to say, okay, have you read the course material? Have you shown an ability to use the material from the course in your answers? This does not do a good job of that.
I saw another comment you made recently saying that you sort of felt betrayed by this process. Yeah. You participated in one of these insight forums. Why do you feel betrayed?
Well, first of all, I want to say also, my betrayal is not important here, right? Because I'm just one person and it doesn't matter.
You're not the only one who feels that way, though.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of skepticism heading into this process. There was concern that, you know, this would be, again, just a show and not doing anything substantive. But, you know, I talked to some of the folks involved in this, and they were serious people trying to do something real. And they were trying to do this in a careful, deliberative way, which is so unusual in Washington that I appreciated that they really wanted to be bipartisan. They wanted to get everyone on board. They wanted to educate people. And that, you know, I'm an educator. I think that's very important to do. So I appreciated the process. Now, even from the announcement of the process, some of the glaring, you know, missing topics in the forums were kind of concerning to me. But I don't feel it's useful to sit back and throw stones without participating, right? You should at least engage. Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, then we're all just on Twitter, you know, shouting into the wind, right? So I think I and a lot of people felt we should participate. We should participate in good faith because there seemed to be in a good faith effort. I don't think this, what has been produced, represents an attempt to synthesize even the discussions I heard in my one forum of the nine. And it doesn't feel to me like the result of a good faith effort to integrate all the discussions that are happening both inside the forums and outside as well. And I think that's where this sense of, betrayal, I know I feel maybe it's too grandiose because it does feel like disappointment, really. Like, you know, that this was a lot of time, a lot of work, a lot of people's time got spent, and something better could have come. I mean, you know, we should hold our representatives to higher standards than this.
We spoke recently with Senator Todd Young for the podcast, and I sort of asked him what next steps might look like. He thought that this year they could maybe pass what he characterized as base hits. And one example was encouraging like the U.S. AI Safety Institute to come up with voluntary standards. I wonder, after reading through this roadmap, does it change at all your expectations for what Congress will do next?
I'm actually worried, because I think that, you know, given what this roadmap is indicating and given what you just said, there's one optimistic view saying, okay, there's a base hit now, another one. But given the way Congress has been functioning, it's hard to believe that a continuing process of legislation will produce new ideas around tech. You expect a kind of one and done at best before people move on to other things. And so what this does, it actually just kicks the can down the road. And the problem with that is that the processes within the tech sector for handling AI are already slowly calcifying. Right now, things are still fluid, but things are beginning to calcify a little bit. You're no longer saying, should we have governance frameworks? You're actually comparing governance frameworks at companies right now based on what they perceive the current liability, risk, and other things are. Which means that even if you push this like a year or so down the road, you're already going to be in a situation where companies say, look, we already have this stuff in place. You now can't pass legislation that's going to make us turnover, that's going to hurt innovation, that's going to hurt our bottom line. Delay is a tactic. And no matter how much in good faith people might think base hits are good, we are beyond the time for base hits. You know, you do base hits when you're not quite sure what's happening. We have more understanding than that. We shouldn't be hitting base hits right now.
Suresh, really interesting insights as always. Appreciate you being back here on Politico Tech.
Happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
After talking to Suresh and hearing all of his criticisms, I reached out to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's office. A spokesperson there acknowledged that the roadmap, quote, does not capture the complete universe of policy priorities he personally supports, nor does it purport to detail all of the perspectives shared at the AI Insight forums. But his office also defended the roadmap and noted that it encourages committees to consider bias when drafting legislation, and that it states existing laws against discrimination must be applied to AI. And when it comes to those research dollars, Schumer wants it to be spread across government and used to fund, quote, responsible innovation. That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow